हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So now the commentary by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the first verse and on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhashya. There are innumerable engagements in the execution of devotional service. As Srimad Bhagavatam and Hari Bhakti Balas have described many of them. Broadly, 64 limbs of devotional service are considered as the main engagements of bhakti. Right? So this means the Bhagavatam Hari Bhakti Vilas, they will be establishing this facts. So taking from there, at the instruction of Lord Chaitanya, then Srila Rupa Goswami then pulled those 64 items from taking from Bhagavatam and Hari Bhakti Vilas. So then this also then another aspect, side point, is one is Bhagavatam becomes the main book. Hari Bhakti Vilas then is, you know, describing the technicalities of the devotional process, and in that then it's accepted that it's a bona fide work that we work from, right? And so the discussion on whether Sanatana Goswami has put it together or whether Gopal Bhatta has put it together actually is not a discussion, right? Sometimes the academics love to get into this kind of stuff and, you know, spin heads around because it's more fun, right? Give something to talk about, right? So but we see that Rupa Goswami in the sixth chapter of Nectar Devotion says he's quoting from Sanatana Goswami's Hari Bhakti Vilas. Right? So, and we see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is speaking about it in the same position of authority. So then for us, it's fine. We don't need to get into these other, how you say, kind of like discussions, these tangent discussions that actually aren't really going anywhere. Right? Vaidhi Bhakti, devotional service according to rules and regulations, and Raganuga Bhakti, spontaneous devotional service, are the two methods of executing these 64 principal engagements. Right? So as we discussed, just to bring that out again, it's an important point, is that the 64 items of devotional service are the standard. Now you can follow that according to Vaidhi or according to Rag. Either. It's not that 64 means Vaidhi and Rag means something else. No. There's 64 items of devotional service that are practiced in sadhana bhakti. Now, whether you use Vaidhi sadhana or Raganuga sadhana, it's the same, it'll be the same thing. And unfortunately, you'll also find when you get to Bhav sadhana that it'll still be following those same basic principles. Then it's not necessarily in the form of the rules, but all those activities will go on naturally. And then when you get to Bhakti, which is even out of the realm of sadhana, still you'll be practicing those things. You'll still have a guru, you'll still be living in the dham, you'll still be worshipping the worshipable deity, you'll still be associating with devotees, you'll still be chanting the holy name. So, in other words, they're the basis of the whole process. And so for the beginning, we follow it according to Vaidhi or Rag. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj glorifies pure and spontaneous devotional service as the best method. Lord Gaurasundar has identified the best engagement by saying, quote, the congregational chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna is the most perfect form of devotional service. Because if you're in the association of devotees, you're chanting the holy name, then from that naturally is going to be study of Bhagavatam, worship of the deity. Right? You're going to take Vishad, you're going to be that place that the devotees are, that's going to be, you know, transcendental. So all those things will come out of this one, right? So of all of them, the chanting is the most important, that in the association of devotees, then automatically everything else will come. If it's just you and chanting, it may not come. But you and the others, then all the other items will come. Does that make sense? It just naturally comes. The absolute truth defined. Those who know the transcendental absolute truth have defined the supreme non-dual substance as Brahman when it is preliminarily realized as eternity. When realized as eternity and knowledge is defined as Paramatma. Right? So eternity means that it's existence. Right? You say someone is happy, right? He is sad. You know, he is active. He is lazy. You know, so those are all states of existence. Right? So in other words, you're recognizing God's qualities, but not in relationship to his pastimes. Does that make sense? Because why not in relation to his pastimes? Because the tendency is we're seeing it in connection with material energy. Right? You see his qualities in relation to pastimes, that's Bhagavan. But when you see the qualities on their own, then you're seeing them in relationship to material energy. So non-Krishna consciousness means you're seeing the quality, but you're not seeing the connection to Krishna. Krishna consciousness means you're seeing that quality is actually coming from Krishna. Right? But it's still not connected to the pastime. So that's Brahman understanding. That's the Vaishnava Brahman understanding. Right? You're able to see within whatever is your field of activities, whatever is observable by you, the qualities that catch your attention, that make you note it, those qualities are coming from Krishna. Does that make sense? So for each individual, that may be different, or a different combination. But in any case, the same principle works for everybody. What you notice is what you value. Right? And what you value is something that's alive. Right? Dead matter is not what we value. There's some quality of that dead matter that you like. Right? You know, you say, you know, okay, somebody has this machine here. Why do you like this machine? You know, oh, I just like, you know, the earth element in it, you know, and then there's the fire element, you know, little thing, and the air. No, it's because it does this or it does that. You know? You understand? So what it's doing, you're talking about the existence of it. So that's a quality, right? Because remember is that the Brahman is the effulgence coming from Krishna's qualities. Right? So that then in the material world is pervading everything. It's also Brahman. And so those qualities are what you're noting. Now the question is whether you want to be Krishna conscious and recognize that that comes from Krishna, or you want to say that the dead matter is actually what is inspiring you. Right? Does that make sense? So this is the Brahman platform. It's God conscious, but it's the lowest level. Right? Then, next is when realized as eternity and knowledge, it is defined as Paramatma, because then you know how the mechanics of the material world are working. And that's going by the approval of the Lord, right? So Daiva, right? When you have the field of activities, you're going to have, what is it, the doer, you're going to have the particular field itself, the action itself that needs to be performed, and the endeavor that you make to do that. Right, so those form will be basically you, or there's the doer, and then the other three are the field of action. Right, then you have Daiva, or the Supreme Lord. So Paramatma is then you have knowledge there, because you're seeing Chit, Achit, and Ishwara. Right, and that interaction, then you're dealing on the Paramatma level. So then when you're, like in the end of the Bhagavad Gita, the last chapters, or in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, all the technical, metaphysical, what's going on, how it's actually working, what is connecting to what is turning into, transforming into what, that's the metaphysics, that's understanding Paramatma. You understand? So that's the next stage. If you can see the energies, then you can see how those energies is the field, and then you're involved in that field as the so-called doer, and then there's Daiva. Right? So then Paramatma has to be involved. So that's a higher level of understanding the energies and all that, what's going on in the field. Does that make sense? Right? It is when its transcendental nature of full knowledge, eternity, and bliss is realized with all potencies, that supreme absolute truth is known as Bhagavan. Okay, full knowledge, eternity, and bliss, because full realized with all potencies means it's not just the potency that you're dealing with that attracts your attention, that it's everything that goes with it, because that's just one thing in the field. Right? But for Krishna, then it's all, that's just one aspect in his whole pastime. Then you see it's Bhagavan that he, as, you know, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kiradakshaya Vishnu, I mean, Karanadakshaya Vishnu, he is then, it's his material pastime. The jiva wants to be involved in the material world. He is then creating this for his relationship with the jiva. Right? It means the jiva is not upholding their part of the bargain of responding nicely and recognizing Krishna, right? But it doesn't mean that Krishna doesn't still work that way with us. Does that make sense? And he works with us on that as to what is important to us, right? Our conditioning today is how he interacts with us. But we tend to not see him in it, right? Or as we begin, then we see the Brahman element in it. It's not that thing, it's actually the potency in it. Then next is we see that potency and all the different things and all the rules and Paramatma and how it's all just functioning like that. So then it becomes, in other words, the first one is more the emotional involvement in that. The second one is more the intellectual involvement. But then the third gets back to the emotional again, but this time from the purely transcendental. Right? It's not, I have this emotion, but that emotion is actually this. It's that these emotions and all that are going on is because that's the only way I'm relating. And so Krishna deals with me that way. Does that make sense? Mother Jashoda can only relate to Krishna as his mother. Therefore, he will reciprocate that way. That's what he says in Gita. So right now, as we will only relate to Krishna in our particular conditioned nature. Right? So that's the only way Krishna then can respond back. Right? I think I'm, you know, something special in a certain way. So therefore, Krishna comes as the potencies of that particular field that we identify with. Right? Because until you get to Kshetragya, then you think you're the Kshetra. Right? Because the doer then is part of the field also. Right? If you're an observer, the doer is part of the field. But if you're an observer, then you're observing it though you're doing, but you know that it's not you doing it. That's the difference, right? Between the Sakam and the Nishkam. Right? So you don't identify that I'm doing it, it's by Krishna's grace that's going on. But since I want to take part in this way, Krishna puts his potency through me. Does that make sense? So then, because that's the way we're relating, that's how Krishna approaches us. But it's still Krishna is approaching us. You know, in our state, right? And interacting and putting all these things and making it all happen. But the tendency, we don't see Krishna. So when we see him as a person, he's doing all this, then you're dealing with Bhagavan, right? But we're dealing with Bhagavan on the platform of Narayan, right? And so then it just has to continue from there to get to Bhagavan meeting Krishna with Radharani. Right? Yes.
There are many examples of devotees who offer something to the Lord and he reciprocated in, you know, very great ways. So if we, in our initiative of approaching Krishna, then can that be over and above our karma?
How we approach, can it be over and above our karma? Means as a devotee or as a non-devotee? You don't know. Can you tell the difference between the two?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you know, everyone has something due to them because of the past experience.
That's there, the do, but the point is what is inspirational is what you do with what you're due. You know what I'm saying? You work so you get some money. That's normal. That's just life's fact, You know, what you do with that money, that's what makes the distinguishing element. You know what I'm saying? Somebody has time and energy and all that, and so they do something special with it. That's what they're noted for. Right? They're not noted for what they've gained, it's for what they've gotten. You know what I'm saying? You hear stories about Rockefeller. You don't hear stories about Rockefeller's son. You know what I'm saying? Why? Rockefeller had nothing. He made the money. His son was born into the money. You don't hear about him. You know, like you hear about Bill Gates, right? Do you hear about his son? Never. Not even thinks this guy's got a family. Right? Because it's no big deal. He's born rich. That's special. That's nice. It's fortunate. You'd say it's fortunate. But you don't think it's special because he's not doing anything. Right? Now, if he takes that money of his father, does something special with it, then he'll be noted. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, people are noted for their action. Right? That may result in them being identified in a particular way. So that becomes an identity. But and that praise will remain, or that impression means that being appreciated will remain as long as the activity is there. When the activity stops and it's only an identity, then after a while that identity starts to get old. They're appreciated. But it's not like it's something new, fresh now. You know what I'm saying? So that's a difficulty. Then someone thinks, I've attained this, so now it'll stay like this forever. No, because you're not doing anything new, so therefore it will go off. You like that? You know what I'm saying? But what they've done, you respect them for, and that, they have that. But it's always, that also has to be balanced in the way of what's going on right now. You know what I'm saying? The general may say that, yes, you know, in the Battle of the Bulge, we did this and that and so many things, and these guys today have it easy. They just push some buttons and, you know, things blow up. But the point is he's not pushing the buttons. The guy today is. You know what I'm saying? So he's respected for being there, and because of him, then we have some buttons to push. But the point is the guy pushing the buttons today, he's the one in the forefront. You know? Unless what the other guy did was so great compared to anything else going on now that it still overshadows. But once it doesn't overshadow anymore, then does that make sense? But so what someone's respected for in the past has still been action. And what someone's respected for now is action. So if there's inaction, where will the respect come from? Does that make sense? So it's more important what you do with what you have. Like that. So that is not karma. That's free will. Right? So that means you can develop and expand things. You know, what facilities you'll have, you know, from the past, that is due to your previous work. You don't have much, you endeavor to try to get more now, that means your work now will produce results in the future. Right? Then you get more facility, because that's the result of your work. And then what you do with that facility, that will then generate in the future, and that will be what you're known for. Does that make sense? So there's always the two going together. Does that make any sense? Or did that answer the question? Or?
Yeah. Okay.
Anything, side points that were missed, or main point that was missed?
It just seems the ability to do something now is restricted by what's gone before.
The ability to do is restricted by what's gone before. No, your facility is restricted by what's gone before. But what you do with that facility, that has no restriction. Does that make sense? That's the thing. Technically, there is no restriction. We think there is, but there isn't. Does that make sense? Prabhupada explains Narad Muni can move through the space because he doesn't think he can't. You know what I'm saying? We think we can't, you know, move through the space, so we can't. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the person thinks I can do this, he does it. The person who thinks I can't do this can't do it, even though the facility's there. So that's the principle. You know what I'm saying? So of course you may have had to have done certain pious activities, you know, or that to get the mentality that you can do it. You know, so you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So even someone who's born in a difficult situation, if they have faith, then so much can be done.
I'd say it means, what were you reading about in 5th, 6th, and 7th grade? Right? All examples of people from, you know, the gutter that worked their way up to the top. At least in America, that's what they, how they, you know, that's all those stories, you know. They don't teach you those stories in England or something. Everyone's got to maintain status quo. Or okay. Yes.
Would that mean then that if, like, we have to perform some activity, some devotional service for Krishna, then we may not have the facilities, but having the appropriate attitude, then we'll be able to gain all what we need to perform that activity properly?
Yeah, means, okay, if you don't have the facility, our ideal facility, if the mentality is right, will then, you know, will we be able to then generate that? One is you can generate it, but two is you have to deal with what you have now. But you'll be able to do the best with it from what you have. Does that make sense? In other words, when you talk about facilities, means main point is there's a principle that you're trying to accomplish, right? Now, along with that principle has natural detail. You know what I'm saying? But if you have that detail, it makes the execution of that principle very complete, very full, very straightforward. Right? If you don't have, then you find what's the next best facilities that you have that you can actually accomplish the principle. Does that make sense? You know, you're starting off with, okay, the ideal for, you know, cooking a lunch is all these fresh, you know, vegetables grown in a very natural, you know, way and everything like that. And so many facilities, the kind of pots you'd need and the fires and this and that. But, you know, the boils down to you know, you have one can of baked beans like that. So then the point is then how to deal with that can of baked beans in such a way that you do it with devotion for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, you have a can of baked beans and a candle. You know, that's as good as it gets, you know. But hot cuisine, you know, here. You know, but this hot is H-O-T, right? You know. Okay? So it's just, that's what you got, so that's what you work with. But the mentality, the principle of, by Krishna's grace, this is what you have, and by Krishna's grace, you're going to somehow or another recognize Krishna's involvement in you getting that can of beans. Then, in principle, it works out. But if you have the facility for doing something more nice, you wouldn't say, hey, what do we need all these vegetables and that for? We just need a can of baked beans. That you wouldn't do. Because then why would you choose that when you have the better? Because the point is Krishna's satisfaction. So, you know, when you read the, how you say, the Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Bogartik song, it doesn't mention baked beans. You know, so therefore you stick more to those things if you have the facility. Right? If you don't have the facility, then you bring it practical into whatever it is. But the principle is always accomplished. The essence is always accomplished. Right, so if the attitude's right, you'll always be successful no matter what situation you're in. Is that okay?
Maharaj, the principle is the understanding that Krishna is only the one who is giving everything. And then we have to work with
yeah,
that.
The principle is, yeah, Krishna is the one giving, Krishna is the ability. You know, Krishna is who we're offering it to, Krishna is the experience of all that. You know what I'm saying? Then it'll be nice. You know.
That would be kind of an understanding or common understanding.
Well, that'd be whichever of these is there. But if you understand Krishna, he is arranging, that's Bhagavan. You know, like that. If you're looking at it, but it means Bhagavan means as a person, you know, that's his interaction with you. If it's a matter of, this is what, you know, Krishna's provided, so that's Bhagavan. But your consciousness may just be thinking of the mechanics that it's sent like that. So a lot of times it's not understood what we're dealing with, like that. So it's basically consciousness. Like that. Is that okay? That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, is called Vasudeva when he manifests his supreme opulence. When his opulence gives way to his loving conjugal mood, he is known as Krishna. As Narayana, he particularly reciprocates with his devotees in rasas of Shanta and Dasya. Lord Krishna is the worshipable object of all five rasas. Yeah, so that basically means the difference is that this softness, this kindness, because it's like Madhurya means is sweetness or Karuna, right? Lord Chaitanya is also known as Karuna Avatar, right? Because that kindness and all that. It's like getting to, you just check that pot there, it seems to me. The Karuna Avatar, that kindness, that mercy, because that goes with sweetness, right? You can't be rough and harsh and be sweet. Right, you know, the Australian, you know, rough as guts, you know, is not known as sweet. So that kind of thing, you know, is that's the matching of, so that's what makes Krishna special. So in Narayana, it's the opulence, the potency, the power, you know, his godness, like that. That's what makes it special. Right? Is that okay? Like that. So this is then these two, either is his position basically as tattva, or the position actually in rasa. Not Narayana's also dealing in rasa, but the appreciation of that rasa is generally through the principle that he is God. Right? And he has all this opulence. Right? For those in the rasas above Shanta and Dasya, it's just that they like him for his qualities, right? He can be God or not God. You know, they couldn't really care less. You know, what he does in his spare time, you know, they're okay with, you know. Does that make sense? But otherwise, it just doesn't make sense. You know, see, we see Krishna, Arjuna sees the universal form, he gets bewildered by it. Mother Jashoda sees it and just think, you know, am I having some problems with digestion here? So I'm getting some little bewilderment and stuff like that. It just doesn't make sense, you know. It's like, does this make sense? Lord Krishna's Vaibhav Prakash expansion is Lord Balaram, who rules Vaikuntha in his eternal Chaturvyuha forms. So in other words, the element of, so we saw, see here is there's Narayan and there's Krishna. So Balaram is expanded from Krishna, is non-different from Krishna. But he is actually the source of all the other forms. So all the Narayan forms are coming from him. Because from Balaram comes Mahanarayan. Right? From Mahanarayan then comes the Chaturvyuha. From that Chaturvyuha comes all the other Chaturvyuhas of the Vaikuntha planets or the Purusha avatars of the material world. Right? Because you'll get Mahanarayan as one person. From him you'll get Mahasankarshan, Mahavasudeva, Maha, like this. So from Mahashankarshan then comes the Purusha avatars in the material world. Right? Does that make sense? Or they expand into the 24 Vishnumurtis in Vaikuntha. Like that. Does that make sense? So that way, when you have Krishna and Balaram, you have all these aspects of Godhead represented. But all the other forms of Godhead are all devotees of Krishna. Vishnu is a devotee of Krishna. Right? Like that, because he's Ashray. In Vishnu Tattva, he's Ashray. Right? To relationship with Krishna. Krishna is Vishay. With his devotees, he's Vishay and they're Ashray. Right? So therefore, that's why then Balaram's supreme personality of servitor Godhead, because of this element of Ashray. So when you have the two of them, you have the complete manifestation of Godhead. Right? All the aspects. So you have Krishna and Madhurja, and then you have all the other aspects of Aishwarya or Maryada or this or that. That's all then expanded from Baladev. Does that make sense? Japa Kirtan and Sankirtan. Right? So in other words, we've discussed Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, and then in Bhagavan, these two aspects, right? Of Mugdata and Sarvagya. Right? It means all knowing, so all opulent, all everything. Or, you know, putting himself under the control of his internal potency, that even he's surprised by what happens. Right? Like that. So basically, Krishna is always Mugdata, and then the other forms are always Sarvagya. Like that. Does that make sense? Japa Kirtan and Sankirtan. The chanting of mantras is properly supposed to take place in the mind. It's called japa. By japa, the chanter receives his desired perfection. Audible chanting in which the lips move is called kirtan. It is more effective than japa and avails the greatest benefit to the hearer. Sankirtan means total or perfect kirtan. All other devotional activities become unnecessary if one does Sankirtan. Sankirtan can never be partial or imperfect glorification of Lord Krishna's holy name. Because partial or imperfect chanting of Krishna's name is unable to cause a wonderful transformation in the living entities. Partial or imperfect kirtan should not be accepted as Sankirtan, as people would then doubt the potency of kirtan. Let Sankirtan, the total and perfect chanting of Krishna's holy name, be victorious. The experience of something mundane can only be incomplete, but the transcendental plane is never touched by material nature. Therefore, by the discussion of transcendental subject matter, Krishna, the supreme subject, one experiences all supramundane perfection. Amongst these perfections are seven that are specially invoked by chanting Lord Krishna's holy name, as explained in this verse by Lord Chaitanya. Okay, so now he'll go through the seven points. So basically, he's established devotional service, right? Meaning that it's based on Bhagavatam, on Hari Bhakti Vilas. Then from there, Rupa Goswami establishes the 64 items. These are then practiced through Vaidhi or Rag. Then we will be practicing this devotion. It will be focused upon the Lord. We will be able to understand the Lord in connection with either our Brahman understanding, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. As Bhagavan, then he is in his form as opulence or in his form of sweetness. Right? And then that kirtan of the Lord, then if it's alone in the mind, that's japa. If it's louder where you can hear it, that's kirtan. And if it's done with others, that is sankirtan. Then that sankirtan that's being done properly, then that is actual sankirtan because it has the potency. People are impressed by it. People are moved by it. People are purified by it. People get realization by it. That's Sankirtan. If it's not doing that, technically it's not Sankirtan, because then if it doesn't do that, people would lose faith in Sankirtan. So you have to say it wasn't Sankirtan. Right? Yes?
What does it mean by partial or imperfect
glorification? It means the details, because in here it's not specifically going into that, but I would expect it means details of, you know, before we're saying, you know, Pratibimba Namabash, or what was the other Namabash?
Chaya
Namabash, right? So the Pratibimba means that it's you're not actually connecting the name with God so much, the impersonal understanding or some other thing that just is not favorable to devotional service, really. Chaya means that it's a shadow, means it's in the direction of favorable, but the consciousness may not be ideal like that. But it still works. Because Haridas Thakur then is mentioning that in Namabhas, that you're liberated. Right? Because for the Mayavadi, the impersonalist, liberation is his goal, so it's a very difficult thing to obtain. For a devotee, liberation is not what he's trying to obtain. He's trying to obtain pure unalloyed devotional service. So liberation is just a side effect. So Chaya Nama Bas will give liberation, right? But only pure chanting will give you prema. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, then if the attitude of those in the kirtan is correct, it will have that effect. It'll have that potency. It doesn't matter how advanced they are, how new they are. It will be it'll be sankirtan. It will have the effect. But if there's pride there, the thinking, I'm so great in this kirtan, aren't I leading so fabulous? And the other one's thinking, aren't I playing the madunga so good? And the other one's, well, I'll check out my kartals. Then in that, then they may be impressed by it, but the others might find that nothing happened there. So technically that wasn't sankirtan. Because otherwise, if you call it sankirtan, then you would think, though, what's wrong with sankirtan? No, sankirtan always works. So if it's not, that just meant, you know, it's just like if the preparation came out nice, everyone tasted it's good, that's called cooking. But if it came out, it didn't taste good, that's not cooking. You can say, no, we did the process, we put it in the pot, we put fire, we boiled it, you know, we put the chants like that. But it still is not cooking. Because cooking means it tastes good. Right? Otherwise, people will lose faith in cooking. You say, no, 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 it's cooking, but it tastes bad. No, but it's cooking. You have to accept it as cooking. Then it's like, you know, well, what does this cooking mean then? What's the use? Does that make sense? You know? Okay. Okay. Yes.
Kirtan and Sankirtan are both audible, then what makes the difference?
What makes the difference? It's just a matter of if you can hear it or you can't hear it. It means the difference between Sankirtan and
Kirtan.
Kirtan means you may be alone. Sankirtan means this when it's with others. Right? So you sit, you chant japa loudly, that's kirtan. You know, or you're singing and says kirtan. But when it's as a group, that's Sankirtan. Like that. And then anything that supports that is also then part of the Sankirtan. That group chanting, whatever it takes to support that, that's also Sankirtan. So, yes? In the mind? It's generally recommended, not necessarily, because if you can focus, then nice. But if you can't focus, then... Because then you're dealing with more things, that you're using the senses, you know, the ears are working... You know, the mouth is working. The more things you have, the more it catches the mind. Well, the other one is just it's in the mind. And so, as far as technical, as far as karmakanda stuff goes, a mentally chanted mantra, you get more benefit than the audibly chanted one. Like that. Because it takes more focus to do it. But here, for us, it's recommended more the audible. Like that. Because then the focus is better. You know what I'm saying? It's just as a generic thing, the focus is better. So therefore he says it's better. It's more effective than japa. Avails the greatest benefit to the hearer. Because then there'll be that so much of that focus. Okay? Does that make sense? They're good at words, aren't they? You know what I'm saying? It makes it very sweet because we say the same stuff, but we just use other technical terms. It doesn't necessarily sound as nice. You know, it becomes part of your heartbeat. We'll say it becomes part of your, you know, sadhana, your habit. You become nishta, fixed in devotional service. But, you know, so it's... No, it's a common principle like that. Because religion is one principle. It's just the detail how it manifests, that's all. So some areas more is revealed, some areas less is revealed. the religion comes from God, so then it'll always be on the same principles. Okay.
Doesn't the perception of Sankirtan depends on the individual?
The perception of Sankirtan, does it depend upon an individual?
Not on the performers.
Not on the performers. Because well, the performers are also part of the Sankirtan.
Yeah, but if a person can perceive the real Sankirtan, even if they wouldn't be conscious of that, you would still get the benefit of real Sankirtan.
Yes, but the point is the performers are also part of the... Oh, you mean as taking one individual, whether he's a performer or an observer?
Yes.
Okay, you're not saying that some are doing it and some are standing outside and, you know, eating Mahaprasad pizza and watching. Is that... which do you mean?
Means
the Harinam party is going by.
Yes.
Right? So do you mean the people in the Harinam party... if they think I'm a performer, that's one thing, and if they're observing it, then that's another thing? Or do you mean the party going by is one thing, and the guy sitting on the bench eating the Mahaprasad is the observer?
No, I mean something completely different.
So then please explain.
The point is, there are some devotees, they play kirtan with six trumpets, they have two microphones.
Six trumpets and two microphones.
Six horns. The microphones and their screen.
Are you sure it's not 76? I think the...
Well, it may sound like 76 sometimes.
Okay.
And these two guys are screaming into microphones and then Hare Krishna mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And they obviously are not absorbed in the eternal pastime of Sankirtan.
But even if you're not absorbed in the eternal pastime, if your purpose of chanting that holy name is correct, then the benefit is there. Otherwise, the neophyte devotee who first joins, he could lead a kirtan and it would have spiritual potency.
Yes, but let's say they have no idea.
They have no idea. They're completely bogus, how you say, pseudo devotees that are leading this kirtan. What's your point? What's the point?
That someone else comes by and hears the holy names.
Uh huh. Do they get benefit?
No.
Oh, you're not worried if they're going to get benefit. Okay, so then.
I'm not worried about them getting. And then he understands, oh, these guys really can't play. But because he is qualified,
mm-hmm.
himself can perceive
mm-hmm.
this is Sankirtan. This is real.
I mean, someone who is qualified would see it as Sankirtan anyway.
Yeah,
that's... It's like in ruchi, there's two kinds of ruchi. One is, it depends upon the quality of the kirtan. And the other, it doesn't depend upon the quality of the kirtan. In other words, the first one is, if the kirtan's going nice, they're playing the kartals, mridangas properly, they're singing nicely, you know, they're keeping it, the attitude's nice, everything's going nicely, then, or however much is going nicely, they can appreciate. And they have real taste. The other is, it doesn't matter what's going on, as long as it's the holy name, they're happy. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it doesn't matter if the guys are playing their trumpet, it's out of tune, this, that. But the point is, it's in glorification of the holy name. So therefore, then someone that doesn't, who's... taste for the name is not dependent upon the quality, would appreciate it. And someone else who it does depend on the quality then would feel that, you know, why bother with the trumpet if it's, you know, it's not adding to the kirtan. Does that make sense? Yes.
So sometimes because they're senior men, even though they obviously can't play,
yeah,
but their devotion is right, so the chanting still has the potency.
Yes.
But maybe they shouldn't teach others how to play musical instruments.
That what you would probably...
Or distribute books for that, the same sake.
Yeah, like that. That's there. But
the problem is always somebody gets senior, people tend to take him as an example, or even they think, oh, it's my duty now to become a teacher. Whereas somebody who doesn't even have a tenth of the devotion of that person, but's got more material ability, can see that
materially speaking, what they're doing just doesn't fly.
Yeah. So you want to combine the two. So
yes.
The person that can, in other words, the person that can do it nicely, he should learn the devotion of the senior person and then teach it.
But the senior person who is teaching, to explain to them that maybe you should be doing but not teaching, that's very touchy.
You don't bother.
You don't bother.
You just gain from them that spirit transcendental aspect that they have, learn it yourself, and then you teach. You don't need to, because then if it's obvious to others, then they'll come to you, or others, despite the, you know, how you say, material imperfections, will appreciate the purity, and they'll take only that. People who can take that, they can take from both. People that will appreciate the actual material perfection, then will just go to the person who has both, you know. But in any case, you want to avoid those going to someone who has material perfection but no spiritual, you know, so that they don't go outside to music teachers because they just like music, you know, like that. So that, but I wouldn't bother like that, because it's not, it's easier just to do than it is necessarily, in these cases, to explain like that. Because there's so much scope, you can always find a place to do, you know.
Well, it's like with bogus mantras, whether it be mantras in kirtan or it be mantras on the street with books, somehow people think that's cool, you know. The big guys are doing it, so.
Oh, that's another thing. If you can have influence.
Everybody adds on and events, and at the end it becomes a whole big soup.
Yeah, well, probably I wouldn't even give it soup, because soup generally infers that it's edible.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
What do you call it? Even khichdi is edible.
Yeah, mishmash maybe, like a gruel. But still, Oliver wanted more, so I mean, it's like so. That's there if you can have some influence. That it's that, because the problem's not as much the mantras if they have some basis as thinking that chanting all those mantras actually makes the kirtan. That's more of a problem. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes it has been that people have chanted all kinds of things, but because the attitude is really good and the focus was good, then Prabhupada didn't mind it. But then if it turns into, oh, this is what you have to do, then immediately then Prabhupada say, you know, we don't do that. You know, so there's always the element that if that spontaneity comes, like you see at the big festival, all the devotees are there, the senior men sometimes do the craziest stuff, but it works. But then the other devotees, like what you're saying, is then they will see that, and then after everybody goes, it's just an ordinary day, then they're doing all these amazing things like that, but it doesn't have any life, because it was because of the enthusiasm they did those things, not because they did those things, there was enthusiasm. So that can be pointed out if it's possible. But you pointed out there, it's not that what the others did necessarily was not incorrect, it's that they have to understand the condition under which they do. And if you say, well, they always do that because whenever they're in kirtan, they're always able to generate that kind of enthusiasm, right? But the others aren't, so therefore don't do what they do, right? It means do kirtan, be enthusiastic about kirtan, learn that from them. But the details, stay away from that, because they do it, it's one thing, you know, but it's not that you would do that, you know. Does that make sense? Like Vamsidas Babaji, the way, you know, he looked and the way he, you know, performed his devotional activities, no one could copy it. So you don't take that as an example, but you don't say, well, he's bogus. No, his mood, everything's perfect. But it's just how he's following it, others wouldn't take example from it.
So Prabhupada wanted us to do certain things, and certain things he didn't want it to be chanted. And still everybody does it, and even if you address it, people still think, hey, it's cool, you know, try this, try that, try the other thing.
You have to approach it, what is the problem with it, rather than you shouldn't be doing it. It's just like you have this thing called, it's called akar. Akar means where in the singing of the mantra, that the person singing it actually understands something about it. And so they're bringing out an aspect of the mantra by repeating a particular portion. But it's always within the mantra itself. You know, it's just like you have at the end, sometimes Prabhupada, then after the Panchatattva mantra would say, Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. The Gaur Bhakta Vrinda is part of the mantra, but Jaya Nityananda is not. So that's making up your own, so it's not actually, in our line, it's not bona fide akar. In other lines, they do it all the time, you know, like that. But we take, you know, Madhur, Madhur, Madhur Bhaji, Shankar Bhaji, Ganta Bhaji, Madhur. That's akar, where you just take part of it and play with it and bring it out and, you know, increase the taste. That's proper akar. But this one where then they take it off and go off, you know, Gadadhar, you know, made this kind of mala, you know, on Sunday afternoon, you know, like this and that. That kind of stuff that we don't do. You know, you can say, you know, Jalmal, 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 Kodi, you can say that. But, you know, Gadadhar, Gate Mala, you know, Jalmal, go off and this and that. That's not so important for us. Because it's not there. You know, the Gaudiya Math Brahmacharis make this stuff up. That's their business. But it's not our business, you know. They may have their padati, why, what they do and why they do it. But for us, as Prabhupada, the akar he gave us is strictly within the mantra itself. You don't add anything to the mantra. You can take part of the mantra and that part go over. Like that. You hear on many of Prabhupada's, like bhajans, he'd do that. So that you can do. You know, or the other one is that there's a certain thing, is that someone who is respected by you, you know, in Vedic tradition, you don't use their name. So that's why we don't generally in the kirtan chant Jaya Radhe, because of our respect for him. Because our relationship with Lord Chaitanya is that of awe and reverence. Not awe and reverence, but servitorship. Like that. Krishna, you can have a conjugal relationship, but Krishna as Lord Chaitanya is servitorship. Why? Because he's Radharani. Our relationship with Radharani is servitorship. So that's why, as a servant, we don't chant her name. So on Radhastami we might do it, but on other days we won't. It's just it doesn't happen. Like the wife doesn't call the husband by name. It doesn't happen. You know. So in the same way, there's a culture there. That's why we don't do it. So if you explain it from that angle, then it's more, oh, well, you know, you're just stuffy or this or that, you're stuck on the road. No, it's our culture. You try that. If that doesn't work, then don't bother. You know, you can try, I would say, Jayadvaita Maharaj's padati. You know, when these things start happening, then he goes out and chants japa. You know. Is that okay? Yeah, okay, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, yeah. Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, yeah. Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Wow. Shoot. Wow. Nice stuff here. This is the first mantra. It gets better. You want to ask something?
Yeah.
What is this you want to ask?
Srila Prabhupada mentioned that one shouldn't hear chanting from the lips of a non-devotee. Like milk touched by the lips of a serpent causes poison. So the person who's on this other level of ruchi, where they can hear any kirtan, and, you know, experience or appreciate it.
Is but they're hearing kirtan. This is what the karmis are doing isn't really kirtan. Because mm-hmm. It's not really the holy name they're dealing with. Like that. So therefore he's not into that. They're just talking about somebody, you know, sincerely in some way is trying to do. So then they can get something from that. Or it may remind him of, and then he himself is absorbed properly. But generally they won't, because there'll be no taste.
As what makes the kirtan. And
that is connected. It's connected with the chit potency. It's actually coming in parampara. It's coming in parampara. It's been touched there. Then it works. And if it's not, it's not so important. Problem is they have a class now in this spot, so they can move from there.